In recent years, Unitarian Universalism has awakened spiritually and grown unashamedly theological. Reverend Owen Toll will make a case for what our liberating, life-affirming, and loving faith has to offer today's often fundamentalist and fractured world. I'm pleased to welcome Reverend Dr. Tom Owen Toll. He's completed 47 years of settled ministry. He's now giving sermons and conducting workshops across the land on the themes of his 24 books. Tom and his life partner, Carolyn Sheets Owen Toll, are ministers emeriti of First UU Church of San Diego. He also continues to be very active as a community volunteer. What a wonderful opportunity to share time with Reverend Tom Owen Toll. Let's welcome him.
Thank you, Christina. I want to thank Jim Garner as well for being in touch with me, and Dale Botts, the whole crew of welcomers here, and that's been very special. And I want to thank John Dober as well for having me, supporting my being here. John and I go way back in the 60s, and then actually in the mid-70s when we came out from Davenport, Iowa, and John was at Studio City. And the last time I preached in the Fullerton congregation was when you, I think you were in the faculty club. And Dory Summers was a minister, and Dory's a good colleague, friend of mine as well. And then to look out and to see Nadia Felix, and we go way back in San Diego 35 plus years, and Dick Cole, Dick, we're right over there about 45 years, way back in the neighborhood church. So, and then a lot of you are new to me. And congratulations, Eleanor, on the young adult group. That's really very promising. And I gave the name of a coordinator in San Diego, Alice King, First Church, where they work a lot of campuses down there and can give a lot of tips and how you might want to do your program. After the service, I'm going to be greeting people in the hall. And I have copies of the book from which I'm sharing most everything today on Theology Ablaze, copies of this book, as well as if you're interested in this book, there's others to, if you buy one of these, you get another one, the book's free. So I want to go back lighter on my ride back to San Diego. You may be wondering, how in the world can a book on essential Unitarian Universalist theology be written, given the wide diversity of our philosophies? Well, it can't be done perfectly, but don't let that keep this geezer of 46 years in our movement from laying his soul on the line. In short, what you have in my volume, Theology Ablaze, is a valiant and flawed effort of one partisan Unitarian Universalist brooding over the wonders and the demons and the mysteries of the universe, or pondering what the poet Gerard Manley Hopkins called the dearest freshness deep down things. But there are still others in our fold who will clamor, hey, can't we just leave theological riddles to mainline religionists and focus on matters of personal growth and social justice? No, we can't. Because our personal growth and social justice are always thickened when informed by a mature, well-honed theology. I'm biased, but our contemporary world would be in far better moral and spiritual shape if there were more Unitarian Universalists chiseling a reasonable, a compassionate theology, and then risking that same theology in our private and our public lives. Folks, theology isn't some exotic or esoteric discipline reserved for the intellectual elite or spiritually privileged. or men or women wearing stoles. It belongs to every one of us. Every one of us who stands ready and willing to live more lovingly and die more nobly. As I was driving up this morning from San Diego, I thought of Kate Wolf, the folk singer who died of leukemia at the age of 38. And there's a patch from one of my favorite songs of Kate's. It goes like this. Give yourself to love. If love is what you're after, open up your heart to the tears and laughter. Oh, give yourself to love. Give yourself to love. Every human being with a mind and a heart and a conscience can dig deeply into what Sophia Foss, our religious educator, who became a UU minister at the age of 82, called the intangibles at the heart of every phenomenon. Every last earthling qualifies. Every child, every youth, every adult. We're not waiting for our children to become theologians when they graduate from our program or move out into the world or when they're part of a young adult group. The 5-year-olds and the 8-year-olds and the 12-year-olds who are wrestling with what it means to be alive and are dealing with the fears of daily existence and the joys of their daily lives, they're in-resident theologians. I want to give you an example. It's close to home. Our grandson, Owen, who's 11 now, but when he was 7, he put together, and on the candle table, I have 2 of his drawings, which you can view following the service. The one to my far left is one he created, and he spoke some words after he created this. You can see their hands holding the world. And this is what he said when his mother, Misha, was feverishly writing down what this 8-year-old was saying. Here's what Owen said. The world is a great joy. The 2 hands are children's hands holding up the world that they love. The night and the stars represent a calm that the children want. The light is from the parents. Children need their help to make the world calm. Do not tell me that the little ones do not qualify, or that the youth do not qualify, or that the elders and the crones do not qualify to be theologians. If you're aspiring to live more lovingly and die more nobly during your stay before you go underground, you're an in-resident theologian. I can't speak for you, but I refuse to turn my soul over to anyone else. I want to sculpt and shape my own soul during my lifetime. You know, Buddha, on his deathbed, said, "Put no head above your own, not even mine. Be a lamp unto yourself." Now, he could have said, "I need some clones. I want some disciples. I want some duplicates. And I want you to follow rigidly my path, my words, and become a little Buddha." What did he say? On his deathbed, "Be a lamp unto yourself." Now, you may be familiar with the teaching of the Christian evangelical Harold Camping, whose study of the Bible has led him to the notion that all right-believing Christians would be raptured into heaven on May 21st, 2011, and that the world would come to an end months later in mid-October. Now, he made a similar prediction back in 1994. And it didn't happen as he had programmed, but he said he made a mathematical error, so he recalculated it a couple years ago. What concerns me about this prediction about rapture-obsessed believers is their glee over saving their own hides, while the rest of us burn, rather than pleading with their eternal spirit, with their God, with their goddess to save humanity. They excitedly await the moment when everyone who believes differently for themselves will be destroyed. That's bad theology. That's despicable doctrine. Now, I gotta admit, there are a lot of liberals and progressives in our own ranks who are doomsayers. That won't do either. I'm looking for those in our midst who are chastened realists, who are hopeful, who live lives of hope, of possibility, of potential. Yes, we can be different. We can alter the nature of the universe. We can be carriers of justice and mercy this afternoon. I'm looking for those folks, not the doomsayers in our ranks and in our congregations, any more than I follow Camping's prediction. I refuse to allow fundamentalists of any stripe to interpret God or evil or love or justice or salvation or any of the other 29 overt theological themes that I have boogied with imperfectly. Tried my best. What was I thinking? I guess at my age you want to sum things up. But the world, you see, covets our open-minded and our open-hearted witness. And for those folks who neither covet nor respect our theologizing, and there are more of them than there are of us, I know, that's not going to hold me back. Fundamentalism of any stripe merely generates more fire in my belly. I'm dedicated during my home stretch to delivering our gospel, our Unitarian Universalist gospel, our life-affirming, this world, not some other world, life-affirming, loving, liberating good news. I'm not hiding our blaze under a bushel any longer. And I'm asking you today to join me, to uniformly recognize that Unitarian Universalism needs at least to become better known in today's marketplace of beliefs and behaviors. I mean, tons of folks still get us mixed up with the Unification Church, the Moonies, and I have no judgment on any of the examples that I'm going to share. And we also get confused with unity, among other things, a far more metaphysical, less down-to-earth, this-earth religion than ours. And then there's universal life, the mailbox denomination where you can become a minister for $10. It's probably way more now. It's probably 20, 25, based upon a burning desire to officiate at your buddy's nuptials. And in Walter Martin's recent book, The Kingdom of the Cults, were listed not as a bona fide religion, but as a marginalized cult. And he decries this as notoriously poor historians and then goes on to make whopping blunders himself, like he grants us 50,000 more members than we've got. Then, of course, and I want to come closer to home, oodles of listeners know us primarily by the cynical barbs of the very gifted Garrison Keillor. But it all starts with ourselves getting ourselves right, doesn't it? So can we admit once and for all that Unitarian Universalism is not another social club? It's not a political action center. It's not a hospital wing. It's a sacred site for seeking and spreading the holy. Can we shout from the housetops that we're a temple of transformation? You leave different than you came in. There are folks gathered to heal the spirit on the road toward repairing the brokenness of their corner of the world. There's one more reason for being a robust and relentless theologian. I confess I can't help myself. Too many of my years I was driving the car with the brakes on. Political, financial, institutional accountability, all of that. Now that I just wear a name tag and I'm on the road, volunteer at the homeless center and mentor children at risk, sing in nursing homes. You know, it's interesting. I went to a nursing home. I try to do this in my neighborhood. I believe in sharing and being involved locally as much as possible. So I want to walk to where I'm going to serve. And so I got my satchel of my amplifier and my guitar, songbook, and my music stand, and a Balboa nursing home three blocks away. And when I met Anita Hernandez at the first gathering, and I said, she said, "What do you want to do?" And I said, "I want to sing." And she said, What have you done?" She said, "Why?" And I said, "I'm a minister." You know, I had to say it. I don't sell used cars. I'm a minister. And she said, "Well, we could use you on Thursday evening at the chapels." And I said, "Anita, I appreciate all that. But when I come to the sisters and brothers, I just want to sing, okay? Is there a place for me?" I said, "Yeah, noon on Thursday, while they're eating lunch." And I've been there 3 years, and when you sing from your soul, you can't be grief-stricken. You're filled with hope. And I try to share that hope when I sing. I was about 9, I think, and in our home, like most of the homes in my era, the men maybe took out the trash or did the dishes, but they didn't do much cooking, okay? So my brother and my dad and I kind of went through the kitchen, got the trash, and I'm not proud of the fact that I can't cook real well. Our son can, and our grandson can. More power to the new world. But my mom said, "Tommy, one day I want you to stop, put the trash down. I think I've got a job with your name on it." "I think you might be a minister." Here I am, rolling into my 73rd year. See, for me, being a full force 724 theologian constitutes one of life's main duties and main delights. A duty and delight that I sign on for the rest of my days, and I want you to consider today. Become my companion, because we need all the sisters and brothers possible. I'm not alone. The evidence in our movement is Unitarian Universalism. I mean, we've got kinship circles now. I'm not sure what you have at UUCF, but covenant groups, the circle suppers you were talking about earlier, where we can talk about our souls. What's going on with your soul? Life and death issues. We're becoming more open about that. And I know there's a growing number of Unitarian Universalists that journal, that pray, that meditate, that saunter. These are all, we didn't have to borrow these disciplines from the East or West. They're in our spiritual DNA. Margaret Fuller, Ralph Waldo Emerson, Whitney Young, on and on. These were sisters and brothers who sauntered and journaled and meditated and prayed and thought about life and death issues and tried to embody lives that would give themselves to love. Our son and daughter-in-law and their three grandchildren, our grandchildren are 18 and 16, and Owen, the 11, then resident theologian. They're in East County, San Diego. They're part of that congregation there. And I can just tell you that our son and daughter in the mid-40s, they don't come to the Summit congregation primarily to attend meetings. They're there to grind and do some spiritual work so they can become better partners and better citizens and better professionals and better parents. And they need help. I'm not against meetings, believe me. I've majored in meetings. You know, it's interesting. Oscar Wilde said the reason he refused to become a socialist was that he didn't want to attend Thursday night meetings. Well, luckily, I don't go to meetings anymore. But I've had my fill of meetings, and they're important. In the Jewish sense of begegnung, encounter, meetings are encounters. Terribly important. Don't get me wrong. It's just that of the young adults of the world, like Eleanor, are wanting to raise issues and deal with them so they can live lives of which they can be proud. And you don't get enough of that just at a business meeting in a congregational life. And so anyway, I put together this volume of 29 themes and, you know, easy ones like salvation and God and love and grace and sacred and peace and nonviolence and embodiment and suffering and silence and what was I thinking? Forgiveness. I mean, there's a whole sermon there. I mean, forgiveness is the ultimate form of love. Where you anchor hurts and resentments in the past so that you can create a tomorrow for yourself and anyone you've harmed or been harmed by. But today I want to just share briefly on three of the themes in the book. And there are three that I think we need to work on as Unitarian Universalists. And the first one is mystery. The second one is beauty. And the third one's evil. You know, we've been lampooned as Unitarian Universalists as a demystified religion suffering from an ecstasy deficit. Too much truth in that. Hyper-rational. I believe in being reasonable. But there are trans-rational moments. There are moments and relationships where I cannot prove the result. There's evidence in the 40 years that Carolyn and I have been together, but I can't prove to her and she can't prove to me that we're going on home. We just got to live it every day and live on that edge of wonder and mystery and suffering and imperfection. Life is not a batch of problems to be solved so much as a set of mysteries to be embraced. Mysteries like love and death and sexuality and God. You don't solve them. You don't put them on bumper stickers. You wrestle with them. And occasionally you're able to get an embrace. And sometimes you're overpowered, it's too much. And you got to take a break. I was speaking in Bainbridge Island at our UU congregation. Carolyn and I took a pilgrimage last fall to see family and friends up in the Pacific Northwest. And I'll never forget, I was talking about this theme and about mystery, and a man came up to me afterwards and he said, you know, I'm from a Jewish background, and my wife is a former Episcopalian, and her son, who's 18, is a humanist, and our 14-year-old's a pagan, her daughter. Is there room for us? And I said, are you embracing mystery? Or you have it wrapped up? And he said, well, we're struggling. I said, come on in. We need you and you need us. Carolyn McDade, and I'm glad we sang Spirit of Life earlier. Carolyn McDade wrote that in 1981, 33 years ago. It's one of our, sort of our signature anthem as Unitarian Universalist. It's powerful. And when she, shortly after she wrote it, she came to San Diego and was touring the country with some of her other songs as well as Spirit of Life. She was staying with us. And she said, Tom and Carolyn, I want to remind you that of when and why I wrote that. Because people are taking it out on the streets and forgetting that it's a prayer. I wrote it the night after Harvey Milk, the gay mayor of San Francisco, was assassinated, and I was lost. I was ready to close up. And that came to me in the middle of the night as a prayer. So when you sing Spirit of Life, it's about justice and mystery, but it's a prayerful anthem, a prayerful ode to activism. And don't get out there in the streets without singing and praying and chanting and grinding and spiritually yelping before you go out. Never forgotten that. As Unitarian Universalists, we're starting to realize that behind mysteries lie other mysteries, fresh mysteries to be embraced. Our faith beckons us to engage life, to meet death, to surrender to love, and to wrestle with the eternal spirit. And blessed are those who, rather than avoiding or explaining mystery, have the courage to encounter mystery from beginning to end. Secondly, beauty. There's been no mightier tussle in our movement the last 50 plus years than reclaiming the missing link in Ralph Waldo Emerson's trilogy of truth, goodness, and beauty. I mean, we've majored in truth. Good for us. We should. And we've almost majored in goodness. Smart. But we've forgotten beauty often. And music and the fine arts. It's interesting. I was on the committee that was revising our purposes and principles. And we worked for 6 years. 03 to 2009, and due to structural and procedural mishaps, we didn't get to complete the changes, I think, that would have deepened our theology as a movement. Like, how come forgiveness didn't make the cut? And how about death? Until you consent to die, you can't really live. No mention of death. Are we immortal? On and on. And one of the requests from thousands of UUs across the country that came in strongly was, where's beauty? There's no mention of beauty in the creative arts and our purposes or principles. Now, when I'm underground, there's going to be a group, and it's a younger generation who are going to make those changes. Because we need to thicken and deepen and strengthen our faith. And we need to bring in these concepts of joy and forgiveness. And I want to say, I'm not just poofing up your egos. I'm glad you're in a beautiful sight. I'm glad you're in a religious context. And I hope that continues. as you transition with the interim year or 2 years you have, don't go short on that. I mean, you're getting some unsolicited counsel here. Don't go short on that. Do what needs to be done to prepare the way for a sister or brother to be your colleague in shared ministry. I don't know how long that's going to take, but be open to whatever bends and twists come in the road. But she's got a beautiful sight here. I sense that just driving in and being here and walking around. Spacious, beautiful. You share it with sisters and brothers from another tradition. And as long as you're here, never forget to continue to beautify and make your site special to look at. Too many of our congregations are scruffy. You come in and they don't look or sound like you really want a religious community to look or sound like, let alone your own personal home. This is your congregational house. Make it beautiful. Meg Barnhouse, a friend of mine, colleague from Austin, Texas, puts it this way about beauty. They shouldn't call it the beauty aisle, that place in the store with all the makeup. That's the decoration aisle. It's not the beauty aisle. Beauty's not in the store. Beauty's above you and within you and beyond you. Learn to access beauty. Beholding or creating beauty lights our inner fires. Beauty generates a capacity to become a bolder, better self. The word fair refers to something lovely, but also to something just. For fairness yokes the worlds of beauty and justice. And finally, evil. I know I'm running out of time, but this is a tough one. We've got to deal a little bit with it. Hang with me. We have a time for some Q&A and sharing too. I was transferring from the Presbyterian ranks back in the late 60s to become a Unitarian Universalist. I wanted to be a minister ever since my mom called me to account. But I needed a more spacious, open-minded, open-hearted house in which to practice my theology and to be a minister. I wasn't willing to give that up. And so I transferred into Unitarian Universalism, and I was being transferred up in Seattle, Washington in 1970, I think it was. And Paul Carnes of blessed memory was a former president of the UUA. He died a few months into his presidency. He died of cancer. But Paul, shock of white hair, sort of Charlton Heston kind of look to him. He stood up, he was on the committee, and he said, "Tom, you seem like a pretty good guy. But how do you deal with evil in your own life?" It's a better question than I had an answer for, but I evidently danced well enough to be here. See, it's possible to grow through and beyond tragedies and suffering and evil, to make spiritual comebacks in our lives. But wickedness comes with the territory of being alive. And you never clean it out totally. Until we are focused on dealing with our own internal incompleteness and mistakes and evil, all that work out there in the street, cleaning up everybody else's situation, doesn't work. It's a fraud. Sing a lot in nursing homes, as I told you. And in our hymnal, I'm proud of the fact we have two versions of Amazing Grace that saved a soul like me and the original saved a wretch like me. But I'm a little bit perturbed that most Unitarian Universalists are going to the soul one. In nursing homes, when I go to the soul one, I am bilateral, I go either way, but they say, "What happened to the wretch that I know too well in my own life? Tom, what about you? You clean? You wrapped it up? John Newton wrote that song because he converted from slavery, being a slave owner. Close with a couple stories. When I started out at Dick Cole Neighborhood Church, I was the RE director. And that's really where I spend a lot of my time now with children and youth, particularly children and youth at risk. We have the Wizards of Wonder, the WOW Club, where we do magic and we learn self-esteem and something to do with our hands and our heart and our head, so you can, it's portable, you can take it out in your life and be amazed about yourself and amaze other kids and peers. It's one of the things that I do. And I was an RE minister, and I'll never forget Jeannie Marsher. Remember the Marsher's family, Dick? Yeah. And Jeannie was in the fifth grade. And now she's a scientist. Fifth grade Jeannie. And there I was talking about, if all the good people in the world were red and all the bad people were green, what color would you kids be? 10-year-old Jeannie piped up and she said, Reverend Tom, I'd be streaky. And here was a clincher. And so would you. So would you, Reverend. You'd be streaky too. And a little child shall lead them. Final work of art is the big one there with the chalice. Closer one to me that Owen put together. Again, he's in the kindergarten class. And Kathleen Green was a minister. She's now in New Jersey. Kathleen did something that every card-carrying minister should do. And this should be in the portfolio lineup of the intern or interim. Spend time and get to know the kids and the youth. I don't mean just once in a while up here. I mean get to know who they are. And she spent time with the kindergartners that day, and they were making chalices. They were drawing chalices, and, you know, they could make them out of clay, and they could paint them and so forth. And Owen painted this very large chalice. And Kathleen very tactfully said, oh, and that's quite a large chalice. And he said, well, it's got to hold a lot of light. May the chalice that you and I create and the chalice that you and I are, starting this afternoon, be large enough to hold a lot of light that will shine into the darkest of the corners of our world. 80% of the time. 70 will do. Just let's go to it. Shalom. Salam. Blessed be. And Amen.
I appreciate that you mentioned our upcoming interim ministerial process. We are working very hard, the leadership of our church, to transcend our upcoming changes and maintain our continuity as a congregation. I wanted to ask you if you could maybe just give a little more advice or any thoughts that might be on your mind.
I appreciate that, and I'm going to be down here. I don't know if you can hear me. And that's a longer story than I have time, but I don't want to bypass it because I opened it up actually in the sermon. I wasn't in my notes. I think the first thing is you want to have a beautiful farewell to John Dover. He's been here since 1993, earlier than that, early 90s. 22 plus years of service to your congregation through thick and thin. You want to bless him and send him on his way into the world that he and his family are going to create. So that's the first thing. You've got to do that well.
You don't do it on June 18th. You do it all along the way. And you do it in person, you do it in public ways. You know, some surprises, some off the stairwell kinds of things. Where'd that come from? And you, it's not just that, you know, getting some object. It's way deeper than that. It's got to be those intangibles I was talking about. And you have your personal farewells to John, too. You call him up, you go out to lunch. Or you call him over, you take a walk. Whatever you might want to do. So you have, you bless the past. You can't create a future without blessing the past. And so that's what I would say is really key to deal with that. And then the other thing is that you're not looking for a messianic presence in the interim ship. There's no perfection out there. Sisters and brothers are going to bring their warts, but you want them to bring their integrity and their authenticity. So the kind of person you select is someone that isn't just a sweet mindless embrace, okay? They're going to tell you, sweetheart, love you, it's great, cool, just as you are. No, you want someone that's going to challenge you to become somebody different. They'll include who you are, but transcend where you've been, okay? So that's important. But a couple things like that might help. And then call upon the district resources to help you through this process. Don't do it alone. I like the energy in the room. I like the spirit. I like the morale. I like the age range you're creating here. You've got a vital congregation. Somebody's going to be lucky if you settle here. It's going to be an imperfect partnership.
I really appreciate your sermon today. I'm a long-time member. I came in at the same time John did, basically. But I want to ask you the hardest question I can think. Maybe it will do us some good. But the Christians, for example, hang their hat on believing in Jesus Christ as their Lord and Savior, and their guidance comes from that. That's what they hang their hat on. What do you hang your hat on?
I don't hang my hat. Keep moving on and on. I'm here to heal myself on the road toward healing and restoring the planet. That's one of the phrases we use often. I still like that. In other words, I got some homework I got to be a part of. And I got to restore, sustain, become the best version of Tom Owen until I can become. I'm not a duplicate. I'm not like anybody else ever before or after. Become that best version. But I don't stop there. I stop there, it's narcissism. And, you know, it's self-focus. I've got to move from that self-esteem, self-growth. And I was really focusing on with the kids today, and all of us, about the irrefutable, beautiful self that you are. And take that out and spread that good news. I think our gospel is life-affirming. The Unitarian Universalist good news is right here now. You don't have to wait around for another world, another lifetime. Go for it now. Go for broke now. It's loving. We believe that love transcends hate. It's the governing energy and principle of the universe. I want to be a part of that. I want to not just feel it, I want to spread it. It's not just this Valentine's weekend. That's false. That's okay. I like schmaltz. I'm a romantic. But I'm talking about something deeper. And then it's a liberating. I think our faith liberates people's minds from blocks and rigidities and doctrines that are inhibiting them from the past. It's liberating. It's freeing. So I'm willing to take that on the road. But the key to me is embodiment. I don't want to talk about anything I don't resemble anymore. And I'm talking about the 70% to 80%. But this afternoon, if you spend time with me, tonight when we're with the grandkids, or tomorrow when I'm with the Sanchez family, I'm the same guy. But I'm talking about today and trying to share about my faith. I want to resemble what I proclaim. And that's core. But there's a lot more that'll do for me. One more.
Yeah, just one last question. Ed has it. Ed will have to be right.
Thank you. My name is Ed Shabrani. Like yourself, I'm also a theologian.
My theology is something I describe as radically transcendentalism. I have a lot of people, theology is a foreign language. So you try to explain something and you've got to make it simple. You've got to make it very simple. So you make it very simple and they get it and they say, well, that's a commonplace. Everybody knows that. And you know that they're just going to take it and put it on the shelf and they're not going to incorporate it into their practical decision making. How did they pass that?
Ed was one of the first guys I met coming in this morning. Thanks, Ed. I want to follow this, build on what I was sharing the previous question. We've got to embody, we've got to incarnate in the Christian scriptures, the Gospel of John says, and the Word became flesh. I want my words to become flesh. I want my partner and my family and the Sanchez family I'm with tomorrow and the WOW Club and all the people with whom I intermingle to see that I'm resembling it. So it starts with, you don't convince people by saying, you know, sharing something about our theology. You've got to resemble it. And then they catch fire and say, well, tell me more, show me more. Or you say, show me what brings you alive and brings you joy and justice and love in your life. And you swap notes. That's why, you know, when the Seventh-day Adventists and then the Jehovah's Witnesses come to my door, I don't just brush them aside. I say, now, okay, I don't quite have enough time for your half hour, my half hour today. But let me get my calendar. I don't have my iPhone, I still use paper, too. I got an iPhone, but you know, you show these to the grandkids and what's that? They don't even teach cursive in school anymore. But anyway, that's another issue. But I still have this, and I say, okay, I got an hour next Thursday afternoon. If you're in the neighborhood, could you be in the neighborhood and come by? Because I'd like to hear your story. And I want you to hear my story. But what keeps me going as a person of religious faith and commitment. And when you swap notes, when you share narratives, when you share stories, you don't disregard people. You respect them. You listen and you share. You listen and you share. And whenever I've done that, most of the time I'm turned down, I understand. And in the airports and so forth, I'm turned down. But when those moments of exchange have happened, it could be with an uncle of yours, who's an evangelical. And you haven't bridged with an uncle in a long time. Or maybe it's for your children, they converted to another faith. You haven't bridged with them in a long time. You've got to have the stories shared in a safe, trustworthy environment. And when you do, you come out different than you went in. And that's called transformation. And I hunger and try to be a part of those moments 30% of the time. So it's a joy to be here. And you're in my thoughts and prayers as you navigate the next several months. Stay on purpose. Be the best version individually and congregationally you can be. What this congregation has stood for 40, 50 years, going way back before glory. So, thank you again for having me here.